This is the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by former Chicago Bull, Charles Oakley. Coming up on the show, Oak and I will go into detail on why he decided to write a book, The Last Enforcer, Outrageous Stories from the Life and Times of One of the NBA's Fiercest Competitors. We'll dive deep into his early Bulls years and why he befriended Michael Jordan, his relationship with Jerry Krause, the fantastic Bulls-Knicks rivalries after Krause traded him to the Knicks, and what he's up to now to fight hunger in impoverished areas.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, there he is, the great Charles Oakley, NBA basketball player, truth teller, chef extraordinaire, and now, look at that pub, baby. Author.
The Last Enforcer, yes.
Author. Now, I got two questions.
Tell Dennis Rodman to watch out.
Go ahead. I got two questions. They're both obvious. Why did you want to write a book? And why did you select such a hack co-author in Isola?
Oh, yes. You know, beat writer. But no, the book is based on, it was time for people to really know the real Charles Oakley. I know he watched me play over 18 years. See me back a lot of pages of newspapers and doing a lot of podcasts, and just want to see how I was brought up, my grandfather, and how he raised his family. My mom raised her kids, and just the structure of life, all the stories, all the things that happened, all this stuff is in the book. You cannot go wrong if you buy this book. I'm telling you, if you don't like it, when you see me, I get your money back.
There you go. Well, I got. I told you this before when we were setting this up. I don't read a lot of sports books because it's my job. Well, but I did read this one because I've known you for a long time and I've known Frank for a long time. And I'm not just saying this. It is a very good read. It's what you'd expect. It's very honest, truth-telling, and it's your story. But I do want to get into that family stuff because that really struck me. You were raised by a single mother in Cleveland. Cleveland is still near and dear to your heart. You spent summers in Alabama where your grandfather was. Can you kind of just tell the listeners, you know, what that upbringing meant to you and what it still means to you to this day?
Well, my grandfather was everything to all his, you know, his grandkids, his kids. And, you know, I know his father, his parents who raised him, he left everything out there on the table. He left everything in the field. He left everything at work. He was just a workaholic. He worked so hard. And you see the work he put in, what came out of it. You know, he had eight kids. He started with a house with two rooms, ended with a house with six rooms. He was just always giving, always working. Make sure everybody in the neighborhood was good, and especially his family was good. And, you know, being around that, seeing that as a kid, you build from that. You get the details. You got to be a man when you grow up. You got to know how to do this. You got to know how to do that. So I picked his brain when he was, you know, when I started to get old enough to ask questions and this and that, and he gave me a lot of answers. And to this day, I go back to a lot of his answers that he gave me. And, you know, my family, my aunts and uncles, they were tough. And, you know, my mom, you know, she worked two jobs and trying to make ends meet with the kids, but we got it done.
And you still are very close to your mother. She lives in Cleveland, and you go back there often. What lessons did you take from her?
Well, I took a lot from her. And one thing I'm glad we did, you know, as a family, we always opened the doors to everyone. So when we came in town with the Bulls, the Knicks, whoever, we bring them over to my mother's house. She cooked one of the best meals these guys ever had. And I'm glad I was able to do that because a lot of guys come to their hometowns, you know, just get up and go out. And I'm trying to keep the team together, team chemistry. Few people in the neighborhood, not too many, because we ain't want to make like, you know, the whole neighborhood, the house. I ain't want to run the players away. Like, next time we go to Cleveland, we're not going to Oak Mom House. But we did it consistently. I'm so glad the guys show a lot of love. And that's why I show all my teammates a lot of love whenever I could.
Yeah, talk about a different media era, man. The Knicks beat writers still talk about the time you had the whole crew over to mom's house for some home cooking. Yeah.
So the last All-Star, not this last 2022, 1997, Also, I was in Cleveland, and I was in the Knicks. And I promised the guys I would bring them over to my mother's house for the best meal they ever had. And I lived up to that, because when they came to town, I called Frank, and they was at the hotel. I sent the limo, and I met the limo there, and I rode to my mother's house with them. I took them to my club, and I showed them a good time. Then they had great food. And I think that's what you do to people. You show a lot of people a lot of love. I know they be writers, they're going to write about you, but I didn't try to suck into them to write a good story. They have a job to do. I have a job to do. My job is to perform. Their job to do is write. So I respect them up to the fullest. I respect you, my man, Jay Krause, Lacey, all y'all beat writers in Chicago. A lot of love. Reporters always show me love, because I always try to get my answers that they ask me. Of course, I give them a good answer.
Yeah, I'm very proud that my favorite quote of all time in 29 years of doing this made the book, but we'll get to that in a second. I don't want to gloss over your college years, because I know they're instrumental to you, but I will just say that part you can read in the book. Oak went to a smaller school, Virginia Union, right, and was quite the success story as the number 9th overall pick in the 85 draft. And you mentioned Jerry Krause, and I know you've got a lot of love for him. Describe your relationship with him. I mean, how much did you know he was in on your draft process? Were you surprised when you went top 10, that kind of stuff?
Well, yes. In the book, I talk a lot about Jerry Krause, and he went for Jerry Krause. I probably never been in the NBA, especially playing with the Bulls. He went on a limb. He drafted me 9th overall. You know, I came in there as a man, like my grandfather taught me, you know, go do your job, do it the best you could. And I think that I showed him I was willing to come in and work hard and let everybody know you made the right pick. And to this day, you know, I know a lot been said about Jerry in a lot of different situations, but rest in peace, Jerry. You my man, no matter what they say, I'm going to bat for you.
There it is. It's funny. I got a young coworker who's fantastic at my place, NBC Sports Chicago. And his name's Rob Schaefer. And I was telling him I was going to be doing this. And he's like, he was on the Bulls? Because he's like in his 20s, because he just thinks of you as a Knick. I mean, some people might forget that you know, you spent those first 3 years with the Bulls, and you came to the Bulls at a completely different time. The Berto Center didn't even exist. Where'd you guys practice? Angel Guardian? Where were you practicing?
No, we practiced at the Muscleplex.
Oh, Muscleplex. Right there
in Lake Cook.
Yeah.
They did a lot of different things in the Bulls. They went from Lake Cook, now they're downtown, on Madison right there by Washington. I mean, right across from where the Bulls play at now. So, you know, it's a different league now, different time. They try to make it real easy for the players. So if you're going to shoot around and you be late for the game, something's wrong. I remember in my days, guys would go to shoot around. They didn't make it to the game. They had an excuse. They had 25 miles to drive. These guys got maybe 3 miles to drive. It's a big difference.
There it is. But you arrived for Mike's second season, and your friendship with MJ is detailed pretty thoroughly in the book. Why do you think you guys hit it off so well initially?
You know, I talk about him a lot in this book. Matter of fact, he did it forward, but I don't know. I guess, you know, for me coming from a small school and coming in, showing guys I'm willing to work, I'm willing to take on the task. I got to do what I have to do to make this team and show that I can play this league. And I came in and I brought my hard hat and my lunch bucket, and so I went to work.
What are your memories, kind of your dominant memories of those first 3 seasons with the Bulls?
It's just a lot of fun and joy. It was like being on the Jackson 5's on tour, one of them rocks groups with the lead singer Bon Jovi, the Kiss, one of them groups. But just the attention that Michael was getting, he was just starting too, but you can see it's coming. You know, I think I talk about just, you know, me and him, just we just clicked. And after he took me to the All-Star game, my rookie year, and it just kept going from there. And we started riding to the game together on the road. You know, at home, we ride together because we stay around the corner from one another. So we always were doing something, playing ping pong, pool. Richard didn't come over to the house. So we were just always chilling, always together. So we just got tight, you know, going to McDonald's. That was his favorite meal in the morning, McDonald's.
Right before practice, man. What are your memories of the 63-point game?
I got a lot of rebounds and a lot of putbacks. And it was great for coming back from injury, you know, in the playoff. I think the Bulls didn't really want him to play a lot of minutes. He said, I want to play. I'm not going to play. So they got rid of the minute restriction, and he just went to work. But, you know, Boston was tough back then. They was a veteran team, got all the calls. But he showed the world that what he was made of. You know, no matter who they had on the other team, they couldn't stop me.
And speaking of your connection to Michael, you're with him when you get word, and this is obviously before social media and Twitter, that you were dealt to the Knicks in 1988. Pretty emotional and difficult news, but I mean, you handled it like a professional. You realized it was part of the business, and you went on to the Knicks. What, if you want to tell the story of where you were when you found out, it's a pretty good one.
I know.
It's in the book, but you can tell it now.
It's in the book. It's everything we basically, it's in the book. But anyway, we was in Atlantic City, New Jersey, Mike Tyson, the Sphinx fight. And we was coming through the casino, going to the venue, me, him, and Richard Dent, maybe one other guy. And we was just walking through the crowd, everybody hollering, Mike, and Richard Dent just won the Super Bowl a few years back. But as we were going through the door, and I see this guy had Richard Dent wallet in his hand. I was walking behind him and Mike. And I like, hey. And he threw the wallet down and ran off. He had got Richard Wild out of his pocket while we was going to the fight. Anyway, that was the first incident. So the next thing, we get to our seat, and then and Mike had had a phone call. He was talking, low because he didn't want to talk too loud. Somebody called him, and he hung up, and he tried to play cool, Mike. And he said, what is that? Like, man, you just got traded. I was like, what? So, no, I didn't. I said, did you know about it? He said, I didn't know about it, but they mentioned that we might make a trade, but they said who? I said, all right, let's just watch the fight and have a good night. And that's what we did. And, I didn't hold no grudge against Jerry Reinstorf, Michael, nobody. But Michael, it hurt him from the heart because we just bonded and got real close. And but we stayed friends to this day. I went to New York and, he won six championships, I won zero.
Well, I want to get into that because that's actually one aspect of the book that I really like is how well you describe the Bulls-Knicks rivalry from the 90s and just how matter of fact you are in kind of just, detailing that. Yeah. I mean, you could have been part of a dynasty.
Right.
You weren't, but you professionally handled it and gave your heart and soul to the New York franchise as well. And obviously it's well documented how much that trade stung Michael, but it did work out. Cartwright played a good role on that first three-peat team, but you had some incredible years with the Knicks. For those that aren't familiar with that rivalry, try to describe how intense it was. It seemed like you guys played the playoffs every damn year, man. It's just,
I know, it was crazy. It was every year, either the second round, third round. It was just in these conference, you had to go to the Bulls and they was there and they was something, it was like a wall. You keep trying to climb. You just can't get over. Just, you get older. You know you can't get older. So you're young and you can't get over. And you're old, you definitely can't get over. They just had our numbers. They just knew how to play us. I always go back to, when you play the Bulls, you don't sub just to be subbing. Guys can't get their regular minutes. You got to play. If your starters got to play 40 minutes, play them 40 minutes. Because there's something about them. When they bring their subs in, you bring your subs in, they just seem like they get more momentum or something in the game. And they always go from an 8-0 run to a 12-0 run. You can be down 6, go back in the game, you're down 16. So it was just something away. But to my thing about watching the series over the years, I think Pat Riley let Phil get to him a little. Because Phil was known for playing stories in the paper. Oh, they're playing too physical. My guys is my guy. But, I ain't mad at him. Hey, it's like, you play checkers, play good. You play chess, you play good. I think we played checkers, they played chess.
It's funny because when we were setting this up, I told you I was actually in New York for a Bulls-Knicks regular season game, and I ran into Chip Schaefer at Shoot Around, the longtime Bulls right. trainer, and he and I were talking about how we rarely get nostalgic, but just being in the Garden, there's something about it just takes you back to those series in the 90s. They were so intense, and for those that are younger and don't really remember that era, can you describe just how different the NBA was then as compared to now? And I don't mean you to hate on today's NBA, call it soft. Just describe. You watch footage of that series and those fouls are ridiculous, man.
Right. Yeah. But my thing is just you might play Saturday at 12 o'clock. Then Sunday you come back right back and play at 1 o'clock. It was just so emotional and so detailed and people so in glue. I meet people up to this day, back in the 80s and 90s, they said, I'd rather watch the game than go to church. People come, we didn't go to church because at the same time, the game. We couldn't record the game. We want to see the game because we know something's going to happen. It's going to be intense. I tell everybody, we might have lost to the Bulls, but it wasn't like they were just blowing us out. It was like two or three possessions. that we couldn't make. We never made the big shot. Getting the big steals. Until that Mike went to baseball when, you know, they said it wasn't a foul. When Huey Davis got a foul and he made the free throws. But it was just, you know, it was just like, man, all celebrities were still coming. When Tiger Woods was young in the guard up in Chicago Stadium, he used to come to the game and this and that. In New York, you know, everybody was at the game. So it was just one of them things. It was like a must-see game on Sundays, and we played. People were going to stay home and watch it. I don't know why the other L.A. and other guys were intense when they played teams in the West Coast, but I know how the Bulls played the Knicks. It was what must-watch TV on Sundays.
What was the toughest loss, if you had to pick one? The toughest series loss is what I mean.
Probably the one we was up 2-0, and we lost four straight. It's no way. Mike had a bad game 3, and they still beat us, and it just went from there. We just like – it's just something about somebody had a curse on us. We just got a curse when we played the Bulls because we never got the big steal, made the big shot. But other teams, we did.
I want to name 3 names for you just to riff off of for that are primary to that rivalry, because you're typically matter of fact and honest on your view of Patrick Ewing, yeah. And some may view it as criticism, but to you, it's just kind of, you know, calling it like you see it.
Right.
So, Patrick Ewing.
I think if he was more of a leader, we could have won a championship.
Pat Riley.
Pat Riley. He got us there, but he drowned us in the pool. He didn't adjust enough, I thought, as a man playing the game, playing the Bulls. You know, you got to adjust because I feel like every time we play the Bulls, they adjust against us. Either just do something different. Trap Mike on the half court. What hurt us when we played the Bulls, they threw a trap on us the second half. Not the first half. All the time the first half was at home, not on the road. So they had some strategies that we're going to do this home, we're going to do this away. But, Pratt Wild was a great coach. But like I say, you know, they said Lenny Wilkins was a great coach. He won 1,000 and lost 1,000. So he's 50%.
But that's what I want to make clear. I mean, when you say those things, you admit that. I mean, Patrick Ewing's in the Hall of Fame. He's a great player. Pat yeah. Riley's a great coach. He's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, these are great players and great coaches you're still talking about, right?
Well, my thing is, a lot of people just talk about Gila and A-Rod. Gila's got the it factor. A-Rod don't. I mean, it's just Gila. A-Rod probably made more money than Gila. He got better stats. So my thing is, I ain't always about stats. It's how you move your team, how you win with your team. And I think that Patrick had the stats, but he didn't move the team.
One more name, MJ, just from that rivalry. Just zeroed in on that rivalry. Gets all the calls, I mean, right?
We definitely get all the calls. We still talk about that now. So in the book, I talk about that. He get all the calls. He travel every time. So we get into it just about every time we get together. True story. Because I'm so intense. Like, man, you know, if they would have called 1-2 travel on you, we could have won 2 or 3 more games. So... But no, this man just played with his heart. I learned a lot from him and how he prepared, how he worked. Don't take nothing for granted. Just want to get better every time you see him.
Well, anyway, the Knicks Bulls stuff is just fantastic in this book. Make sure to check that out. And as you mentioned, MJ did write the foreword, which was also very cool. So then you bounce around a little bit. I don't want to gloss over your time in Toronto because I know it was important to you, and you were – you know, pretty instrumental in raising the profile of basketball in that country, and great, great fan base to this day. I know they still love you and embrace you, but you landed back in Chicago in 2001. That's when our paths first started crossing more regularly. Jerry Krause reached back out and traded for you from the Raptors to be part of a rebuild that didn't go so well. I just have to say this on the podcast real quick. The longtime beat writer at the Chicago Sun-Times, Lacey J. Banks, was the NBA guy, but Roman Madrowski was the main beat guy. He and I used to have so much fun talking to you and Greg Anthony after every game because you were our veterans to set us right as this rebuild was trying to get off the ground and it was not going well. So you guys gave us plenty of material with which to work. But what are your memories of that 2001-2002 season, other than that's a loss?
So in this book, I'll never forget Tim Floyd. Who can forget him? This man was an accident waiting to happen, and it happened every day. Practice, on the road, on the team bus. He just wasn't engaged. He took the job. He robbed the bank when the bank was full and nobody even tried to go behind him. Like, get the money back. So he wasn't ready for the moment. He definitely wasn't ready for the pro level. He didn't know how to deal with men. He was just bad. He just trying to embarrass Eddie and Tyson. I went to war for them guys, because my thing is, you're a coach, you try to energize and show the guys how to get better, not, you know, come in every day just down these guys like this and that. You should have stayed. You should have went to college. So I had to step up, and I stepped up for all the guys. I stepped up for anybody on my team who's doing right. And when he started doing that, I had to go at it. So they fined me, suspended me, but I told him, like, Tim Floyd, you can't even drive a car, so how can you coach basketball?
All right, I'll play devil's advocate for a second. He went to the New Orleans franchise and you know, won a lot of games and made the playoffs. So what do you say to that?
Who did?
Tim.
I didn't even know. I wouldn't never keep up with him. He can win a gold medal. I wouldn't never know it, because I hear his name. I know it's something bad. So, that's good for him. But I'm saying, for what he came into, first job, like I said, everybody get better. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, the Greek Freak, when it started back in 8 or 9, everybody went crazy on me. Like, why he wouldn't have? I said, he couldn't make a jump shot. He couldn't shoot free throws. You couldn't play back in the 8 or 9 if you couldn't make free throws. You know that. Yeah. They're not going to have you in the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game. I don't care how good you are.
Yeah.
Shaq might be the only one who got away with it.
Yeah.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, the 2001-2002 season was a disaster. I mean, the high-profile incident, which you talk about in the book, was it was early. You guys lost by 53 right. Up in Minnesota, and Tim did a five-man substitution and blasted you guys after the game, and we just walked in and went right to you. And I can picture you sitting in that locker like it was yesterday, and you fired back at Tim and got fined $50,000 by Jerry. I was told once many years later that you actually didn't have to pay that fine. Do you remember if you did or not?
I paid it.
Okay. I was going to say we could break some news on the Bulls Talk podcast here, but all right. So, but yeah, it was a bad season. Do you think Tyson and Eddie, you talk about this a little bit in the book, but do you think in any scenario that could have worked if they had stayed with it or not?
I think it could have worked. But I think for when I came in the league, how guys try to help younger guys get better, this and that, I think they didn't have the right people around. I know Cartwright was still there, I mean, if you want. But these guys was raw coming out of high school. You know, they was big. They was good because they were bigger than everybody else. You know, they 6'6", you know, 6'11", 7 foot tall. You play against 6'5", 6'6", you're supposed to dominate. You should have 20 and 15 a night. But when you get to the NBA, everybody's the same size, and you got to know the game, you got to know how to get around guys, and they're not going to give you no call. I know, both of them went top five pick, top six, whatever, but they didn't have no identity. They just – all they had was they was tall. But on the court, they didn't have a skill. They was raw. So back when I came in the league, you had to be able to, like, this guy can do this guy can do that, because team was drafting by what they need, not what somebody said they can come to be. And that's what the Bulls, they drafted him on potential, but Tyson ended up getting better. And it shouldn't have maybe went to Chicago. He probably should have went to another city because he came home.
Yeah. Yeah, Tyson ended up winning a gold medal and a championship.
A championship, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and he got a championship too, though.
What's that? Oh, yeah, yeah, with the Heat.
Yeah, one in Miami.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. No, they're both very skilled players. That was just a train wreck waiting to happen on many levels. In fact, we'll wrap it up not the whole podcast, but the Bulls season, just with this, because I do have to detail, as you know, my favorite quote in 29 years in business, which is in the book. Thank you, Frank Isola, for including it. I have it memorized. I've used it so often, but we went up to you after like a 34-point loss in New Jersey that ended just a brutal road trip. We just lobbed it up. We were like, oh, thoughts on the road trip. And here's the quote for those of you who don't know it. Direct quote, this ain't like a flat tire you just pull over to the side of the road and fix. This is like a blowout. We ain't got no spare and nothing's open for 100 miles. So we got to do some walking. How the hell did you come up with that quote, man?
Well, you know, I was at one in the bag. So I'm just glad I was able to make, like I said, give y'all something to write about. I know if y'all are laughing, what the people who reading it, what they going to be doing. So that's what the book do. This book got the stories going to make you laugh.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to give too much away, but I had to use that one. So Krause, and, you know, let's wrap up the chapter on Krause, because, you know, as you said, I mean, he drafted you, gave you your first shot, traded away for you, traded back for a difficult season. But, you know, shout out to you. You show up for his private memorial service at the Advocate Center when he passed, and paid your respects, which I thought was fantastic. Why did you want to be at that event?
Like I said, Jerry got me into the league. I know it meant a lot to his family, his wife and his kids. And, you know, I just hate to see the guys them show more respect for what he did. Somebody had to put the team together. It wasn't Jerry Reinsdorf. He just wrote the check. He just put his name on the check. Jerry did a lot of work. Yeah, he did. You know, might want to take credit. I don't mind, you know, because he did. Hey, nobody had done it before. But, you know, that's how it is when everybody – that's why they won a championship, because everybody was fighting to be the one who make it happen. You know, so Jared, Scotty, Michael, whoever else, I just give them props. They did it. They did it better than nobody since this, you know, Boston Celtics back in the days, you know, won six out of 7 years. So that, hey, they had a hell of a run.
Yeah, no doubt. So then you leave Chicago, you bounce around a little bit, but you wind up on the Wizards when Michael makes one last comeback. give me your memories and summary of that experience.
Well, it was one of the things. Doug was there. We got back with Doug, you know, like a divorce, get back together. And he was still whining. he's a whiner. But no, it was good, you know. So Mike, you know, got back into the game, bought an investment to Washington, then he started playing. The most important thing, well, people in the city were so proud, so glad he was on the team. He came out every night, practiced every day, played every game. It wasn't like he was just coming back, let me take off 20 games, play half a season. No, he put his heart and soul in it. Yeah, some of his skill level wasn't there, but he competed every night. And we had a ball. I think that the city had more joy for than we did, because just to see him come to D.C. for 2 years and show love. And I don't like the way it exited with the owner, ex-owner. You know, things happen. He went on and got his own team in Charlotte, and he's doing great.
Yeah, how often do you see him? I mean, I know you're still very, very close to him, and you guys
Lately, we have been seeing one another a lot, but we talk on the phone, we text. The last day, we were talking on that Monday. I was calling Monday morning because both of us still get up early. But, you know, I go down to his golf course, you know, go by the house to get a meal here and there. But he just enjoyed life. You know, he got a racing team now. He still loves to play golf. You know, he's raising the family, but his brand, Jordan, is just killing it. You know, he's the man on the move, and he's doing big things.
How is he the same, and how is he different from the first time you met him to now?
You know, you only get more relaxed. You know, everything coming to sell in your life. He's selling down more, you know, basically know the 3 or 4 things he's going to do every day. And like some days, you know, you might do 10 things now. You get, you know, almost 60 years old, you know, doing 10 things, probably down to 4 or 5, you know. So life is more relaxing. You know, you're always playing ahead. And, you know, he just, like I say, he loves golf. And now he pick up a new thing. He fish a lot now, too.
Oh, wow. There you go. Maybe he and Tim Floyd was a big fisherman. Maybe he and Tim can get together in a boat.
Yeah, he fish a lot. He goes to a lot of competition. He got a fishing team.
Yeah, of course, there's got to be competition, right?
Right. Well, you know, hey, you ain't competition, he ain't doing it.
What did you think of The Last Dance?
Well, you know, a lot of people was upset. I mean, especially Scotty, you know, somewhat, I think, you know, maybe some of the Bulls people. It basically, it's similar to the Hall of Fame speech. You know, he just went into, he went in on some people. He gave some people some props. But it was good for the time because of the pandemic. You know, people wanted something to relax their mind and take their mind on what was going on. He brung the book. He brung the Last Dance out. I mean, I was in there a few times. I wasn't mad at it. You know, he showed a different side. He showed a different side in the Hall of Fame speech. So I think he got one more exit speech to go somewhere. When I don't know when it is, he got one more to go. It'd be three in a row. Three championship, come back, win three more. Now, Hall of Fame, Last Dance. So he got to have something, one more something. I don't know what it's going to be.
All right.
But I thought it was cool. You know, it just showed you, you know, we set the ball and look inside something. A lot of things are going to happen.
All right. We look forward to that third one whenever it is. All right. So to make sure, just two more things. To make sure we didn't totally tell all the stories in the book, which we'll pub one more time here.
It's 40 stories in the book, so you didn't tell them all.
I was going to say, but also the two big ones that we're not even going to touch, you got to buy the book to read it, are Charles Barkley and what happened at Madison Square Garden. So,
I ain't scared to talk about it, but whatever you want to talk about, I'm always down for the, you know.
Well, just, all right, Charles Barkley. I'll just say Charles Barkley.
Somebody called me the other day. So in his book, I talk about Charles Barkley, but they called me like, what happened with Chris Rock and Will Smith? And I'm saying, like, ask me, because I didn't see it till the next day. They called me like, I was like, what happened? He said, you see what Will Smith did? Then when I watched it, I'm like, what? I said, I don't know. I don't remember sending Will Smith a copy of my book, because that's my first chapter of my book about Charles Barkley. Because, you know, NBA lockout in front of about 400 or 500 guys. I walked in and I had to tap him up. So Will Smith felt like the joke wasn't funny. You know, it's his wife. I'm sitting right here like, I don't know, something triggered him. I don't know what it was. I seen the King Richard movie of the family, how they got to be, you know, Serena and Venus come up to be two of the best tennis players ever. But something happened that night. I don't know what Will was drinking or whatever, but something made him get up and do the Michael Jackson. He got on that stage. Oh, man, I felt sorry for Chris Rock, though. I don't know. But stuff do happen.
Yeah, and you and Charles are an example of that.
Yeah, so you get my book, you'll see that in the book.
There it is. And then, MSG, I'll just say it's a really powerful chapter, man. That actually was it made me kind of – I gotta be honest. It made me kind of sad overall, just reading kind of you. But it's well said how you kind of describe, you know, that from your perspective. So I don't know what legal situation still exists, but so
in the book it's not about MSG, but we're still a legal fight is going on right now. You know, it's just sad because you know what happened at the time and who for being charged. We getting too many people in charge of corporate business doing stuff wrong these days. If they ain't gonna do something wrong, they always talking about protect the brand. If you ain't protect the brand, what you think the other people gonna do? So just we hope it work out. It will work out the right way because I didn't do nothing wrong. If I did, I would have manned up. I would have had a press conference and told everybody I did with Will. I made a mistake, but I didn't make a mistake. Will might have made a mistake, but I didn't make a mistake. So we'll know something hopefully the next year. Whatever, but I'm gonna still be standing tall because I know I didn't do nothing wrong.
All right, and as usual, Oak is in the car as we tape this. He's quite the. My dominant memories are checking in with Oak and where are you at? Oh, I'm driving 12 hours. You're always like in the car driving somewhere, but he's driving somewhere for a good cause. He's on his way. Well, I won't disclose your location unless you want to, but
it don't matter.
Yeah, just kind of describe what you do and where you're going.
So basically. Since before the pandemic, we had started in Chicago at All-Star, and we started in New York. So I have Oak Got Hungry and Oakley Foundation. We go to different shelters in the city for kids. We just left Philadelphia. We did one with kids and family right before the NCAA game. And we go in, we cook with the kids and family. We give them hot meals. So now we go to Nashville. It's a shelter. and it's like 700 people. So we can cook breakfast and barbecue for dinner. And then we go to New Orleans and do the same thing. So we have six to do. We had did six before the pandemic. So we got six. And then we take a break for a month and we go back on the road, six different cities. So we're just trying to get back to the inner city. And just something my foundation has been trying to do. I had my first foundation event this year, All-Star in Cleveland. It went well. I had no support from the NBA in my own city. But we made it happen because when I put my name on something, I'm going to stand 110% behind it, make sure it works. But you go to Oakley Foundation, we do take the donation. We just started, so it don't have to be money. It can be whatever you can buy for the foundation. We can give stuff out. We can create stuff. So just say you come and be a part of Oakley, hardworking guy, give it back to the inner city, and we're going to work out scholarship for the next 2 or 3 years.
You got a website for that or not?
Yep, Oakley Foundation. Yep, website.
All right, check that out. And do you actually do the cooking at some of these events or not?
I do the cooking at all events. I'm the head chef.
Yeah. For those who don't know, man, O cooks up a mean meal. He's long been a chef. What got you interested in being a chef?
It started in Chicago when we used to go on the road for the West Coast swing and a couple of swings. And then in the holiday time, come home. Remember that time with Brad Sellers? We lost to Chicago. It was Chicago and New York and New York. Brad Sellers, rookie year. And Doug Collins had told everybody they could go home. But the Bulls, some kind of way, we was up and lost. And we got to the locker room. He said, everybody back on the plane. And Brad was a rookie. And we tell somebody something special. Rookie was going for the first time to see your family after, during the season. And he made everybody get back. So it was a big thing. So after that, I said, my skill level got better and better. And I saw I could make the Christmas meal, the Thanksgiving meals, the barbecue. So basically, I can cook anything right longer now.
What's your go-to? If someone says, whip me up your best.
I don't have a go-to. I try to cook what you like. I can cook when you can cook. So some people like certain things. So you tell me what you like. That was what my cooking show was about last year on Fox Soul. So I had 10 celebrities. I cooked their favorite meal. So whatever you like, I have to cook on the show.
I'm mostly vegetarian. What would you whip up for me?
I give you a lot of vegetables, starch. I give you a lot of vegetarian starch.
A stir fry? What? Come on, man. You got to be better than vegetables.
I'll give you some Brussels sprouts. I'll give you string beans. I'll give you, carrots, potatoes, stuff like that. Because Mike Tyson was a vegetarian. So I went to his house and cooked for him before. I talk about him in the book because I went to visit him when he was locked up.
Yeah, I know. So you're tied with all those Cleveland guys, man. Come on now.
Yeah. Well, Mike Tyson, but Don King, when he moved, he was managing him. That's when he moved to Cleveland, and unfortunately, something happened. But he's back on top of the world now. Mike Tyson. Shout out to Mike Tyson.
I will say one of the downsides of you being such a good chef is, as you know, and you say in the book, going out to eat with you at a restaurant is not a good experience.
Oh yeah, that's what I need to do a show. I swear to God, everybody I'll be around talk to, they'll be like, why you don't have a show about Oak at a restaurant telling this person what he want and how he want it. And then he bring it out and it ain't right. What is going to happen? It going back.
Send it back. I remember one time we had lunch one time in Denver a million years ago and you ordered water with gas. That's what you said. Bring me water with gas. And the water had no carbonation. You sent it back.
Right. Well, basically it's water with sparkle. It's regular water with sparkle water. So. Yeah.
All right, so there it is, Oak Out Hunger. Check it out on the website, Oakley Foundation. And again, one last plug for a really good book.
Yes. I gotta say,
The Last Enforcer, Outrageous Stories from the Life and Times of One of the NBA's Fiercest Competitors, Charles Oakley with Frank Isola, forward by Michael Jordan. Oak.
And I got your boy Dennis Rodman in there too a couple of times.
Yeah.
I'm talking about all of them.
By the book. By the book. They're all in there, man. But we sincerely appreciate you stopping by the Bulls Talk podcast. And this was quite a fun time.
Thank you. I will be up for a playoff game.
Bulls playoff game?
A playoff or play in. They falling like flies. They better get ready. They go from number one to number six or seven. They won last night, though. So we'll see what happens.
You still got Joe O'Neal's number?
Oh, do I? Hey, Joe O'Neal on Facebook. Hey, Joe, you on Facebook. You try to be a friend. It's too late to be a friend.
For those that don't know, Joe's the longtime ticket czar at the Bulls.
Joe is the man over there. Yeah. I ain't gonna talk about his business. Everybody don't need to know what's going on, but I'm gonna keep it in house.
Joe knows where all the bodies are buried. I'll just say that.
Oh, do you?
But
I think Josie will go by and put flowers on something.
Hey, but I will say, and you do mention this in the book. I mean, just like Toronto, Cleveland, Chicago still shows you love, man. That you, yes. They love you here, man. So,
Yeah. I do a lot in Chicago. I appreciate that.
All right,
I'm gonna probably do a book signing next month. I'll let you know, okay?
I'll be there.
My man John Kelly gonna set it up. We'll probably do it at Gibson or Italian.
All right, I'll be there, and I look forward to seeing you at a Bulls, whatever playoff play.
All right. So. All right, thanks.
We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.